happen, we have to really escalate the noise we make so that we'll be heard.
Welcome to Gay USA. I'm Andy Hum.
And I'm Mick Meenan.
And
I'm Ann Northrup.
Ann will be joining us to talk about her dear friend and the great leader, Gloria Steinem, in a few minutes. Gloria, of course, you know, died at the age of 92, and they go way back. But we're also going to talk about...
Well, we also lost feminist leader Robin Morgan and gay poet Edward Field this week.
New Hampshire's out gay Chris Pappas won the Democratic nomination for U.S. Senate.
New York City's Mount Sinai Hospital ends gender-affirming care for minors in a settlement with Trump's DOJ.
Terrible.
And they put up $2 million to treat people unhappy with their transition-related care thus far. A protest held Tuesday evening.
I was there. Good protest.
Look forward to hearing about that.
Go ahead. Now I'm going to my traditional cough drops.
In Tucson, more than 1,000 gathered for a vigil for two gay men murdered outside a gay bar.
And tragically as well, in Madison, Wisconsin, two guys are arrested for a brutal assault on a trans woman.
But the Episcopal Church installed its first transgender dean at a Wisconsin cathedral.
Trump's racism and anti-LGBTQ bigotry continue to know no bounds.
We could use that headline every week.
Yes.
Germany's far-right anti-LGBTQ neo-Nazi party made alarming gains in Saxony. But we do welcome Ann Northrup back. How are you, Ann? How have you been?
Well, I haven't been coughing this much. I think it's the studio. I'm great, thank you. It's just been a month since I left. I had a little more surgery to repair lumps and bumps on my chest, and that went fine, and so I hope I'm done with all that.
Good.
And I'm learning to relax and give up the burden of preparing for this show every week, which is an enormous amount of work, so I'm
don't
happy
I know
about
it.
That. But I do find myself missing the opportunity to comment on things.
You are welcome. If anytime you want to make a comment, you don't have to come back. Just call me up, and I'll come over with my camera, and we'll get you. No, seriously, and we'll get your comment. Before we get to you talking about your dear friend, Gloria Steinem, someone we all admired, you were at this demonstration at Mount Sinai.
I was. Yesterday, as we're taping.
A New York hospital that is screwing over their trans youth.
And poignant for me because I've gotten all my care at Mount Sinai, so to show up at the demo was urgent for me, but, you know, it kind of breaks my heart that they're doing this. But I think they're caught in this space of if they don't do it, then they lose all their Medicare and Medicaid funding, and they just get totally screwed by the federal government. I'd like them to sue the federal government over this. I don't know what they're going to do, but there was a very good turnout, I would say, of 100 to 200 people. It was loud. It was urgently against what Mount Sinai is doing in giving up care for trans youth, which is just tragic.
Right. Okay. Gloria Steinem, everybody has heard about her passing this week. You were very close to her. How did you become aware of her and her work?
On the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. 1970, I was a senior in college, about to graduate. The world was just going to hell in a handbasket. Everything was exploding. Nixon was invading Laos and Cambodia illegally. Campuses were erupting. The National Guard was sent to Kent State, where they killed four students, and then to Jackson State, where they killed more, a part which is often forgotten. And hundreds of colleges were on strike, including mine.
Yep.
No classes, no exams, no just students going crazy.
And we should say this was Vassar.
Yes, it was. I would have gotten to that, but yes. And no speakers would go to the campuses. They were terrified. Politicians, celebrities, all the usual suspects would not go be graduation speakers at any of these colleges.
Because
everybody was demonstrating and enraged, and they were terrified.
There was violence in the streets.
There was. I mean, you can't imagine. I feel very lucky to have been alive and experienced all this, but it was a really amazing time. So what was I doing? Watching television. Illegally in my dorm room because we weren't allowed to have TVs, but I had one.
Oh, my gosh.
I had one that was about this big. And I was watching the Tonight Show, and there was Gloria on the Tonight Show arguing with Johnny Carson about the Black Panthers and saying, no, they're not criminals. They're feeding kids breakfast programs.
Yeah.
And I just want to interject, you know, her first breakthrough big article was after Black Power, Women's Liberation, and that was in 1969.
Yes.
It shows the progression of the movements, Black Civil Rights, Women's Liberation, and, of course, eventually, gay liberation.
Yes. And so she was just enormously compelling sitting there on the Tonight Show talking about this stuff. I mean, when else did we hear Johnny Carson talking about the Black Panthers?
True.
So I'm sitting there thinking, wow, she's terrific. And I happened to run into the president of the college the next day, and I stopped him and I said, you know who you should have as a graduation speaker? Because they had no one. And he said, no, who? And I said, Gloria Steinem. And he said, and am I supposed to know who that is? And I went, turned on my heel, went to the library, sat down with a pile of New York magazines for which she was writing a column, and read through them and picked out half a dozen. And then I went around to dorms during mealtimes and got people to sign petitions asking for her to be the graduation speaker. And then I went back to meet with him and handed him all this. And a couple days later, I got a call from him saying, well, I gave the magazines to my wife. I thought, you really are the worst. And she agrees with you. So we are inviting Gloria Steinem to be the graduation speaker. And I thought, oh, my God, that's so great. And then I was invited to a dinner the night before graduation with her and a friend she'd brought along who was a Vassar graduate because she was terrified of public speaking.
Right.
She said, you're really lucky I showed up because usually I don't.
She was a journalist.
Yes, a writer. And
yes.
She was not a speaker. And she had never done a graduation speech. But so I just, like, pinned her to the wall for a couple of hours and talked to her because I was so fascinated. And no one else knew who she was, clearly, so they didn't care or talk to her. By the way, I was seated at dinner next to Kingman Brewster, the then president of Yale, which had just started enrolling women. And he just turned to me and said, these women at Yale, they're writing graffiti on the walls. 1970. So as dinner finished, Gloria and her friend Brenda said, why don't you come back to our room and look at the speech I'm giving tomorrow? We'd like your input on it. I thought, wow. But that's the kind of person she was. That's where I'm headed with this. She was such an open, honest, curious person who really cared about other people and everyone's input and everyone's opinion.
A fabulous listener. And she was totally into that. I mean, she said, you can't just do this writing to each other, or, you know, or, of course, now it would be text. You have to meet with each other and look at each other and talk.
And she was completely open to hearing other people's opinions,
yes.
Which is very unusual. So I looked at the speech. We talked about it. She gave the speech the next day. It was fantastic. I'm so sorry I've lost the little snapshot I had of the two of us there together that day. But then we stayed in touch, and she helped me get my first two jobs. She hired me to work on the first issue of Ms. to do research, which I happen to have here. Now, this was the original of New York Magazine publishing the first issue of Ms. as an insert. There it is. And
New York was, this was a weekly magazine.
New York. And here is the actual inside insert of it. And one of the articles is rating the 1972 presidential candidates on feminist issues, and I was helping with the research on that. I was working in Washington at the time at the National Journal, which she a job she had helped me get. So she just, we adored each other. We did not see each other a lot in recent years. I did write for Ms. I hung out at the Ms. offices. I came out while in those years by hanging out with the lesbian staff members at Ms., of which Gloria was not one. But it was a great atmosphere. And, you know, Alice Walker was an editor there. It was quite a collection. But she was fantastic. So we have a couple of clips from an interview that you and I did with her in 2004, 22 years ago. And this will give you a little idea of Gloria.
But Gloria Steinem, you and I met almost 35 years ago.
Oh, my God. How old are you?
older than you. Not as old as you, but older than him. So I get to think of him as my younger brother. But Gloria, icon of feminism. I hate phrases like that, don't you?
Yeah, it just calls out for an iconoclast.
Exactly, which you certainly are, and I... patterning myself after you like to think I am. But you were a very important mentor to me. You taught me a lot of things, which I'll get to. But you are here to bring us up to date on what's going on with you, to discuss a lot of subjects. You are still speaking and writing. You have an end-of-the-year piece written for the New York Times Syndicate on gay marriage. And you're appearing in The L Word next year.
Yes, right, on the final episode of The L Word.
You aren't coming out, are you?
Actually, I come out as not coming out, it turns out. I mean, because they're asking me why it is that I was attracted to one of their fathers.
Oh, yeah. Well, in fact,
which they can't understand.
35 years ago, one of the most famous things you said was at a press conference when they kept asking you at press conferences about feminism whether you were a lesbian. And your famous reply to the reporters was...
Well, if you're thinking of, are you my alternative, which was my favorite reply to any male reporter or any obstreperous guy who got up in the audience and said, are you a lesbian? I have to say that was Flo Kennedy's. I was using her line. I have to give her credit.
Well, we've all stolen lines from Flo Kennedy,
right.
I once heard say, one of my favorite lines of hers was, when I spit on someone at a cocktail party, I'm not trying to drown them.
May she rest in peace.
Yes, exactly. But let's, first of all, we want to extend our sympathies. This is the one-year anniversary of the death of your husband, David, and, that's a tragic, huge loss for you and very sad.
No, well, I thank you, and if he were here, he would love this show, and, you would love each other. He was just a person with the greatest heart and the greatest empathy with anybody or any person, animal, or living thing who was having a hard time anywhere. He would stop in the street. He would stop anywhere to try to be helpful. A really good person.
I want to use that as an intro to talk about marriage, because you did for many years, you were famous for saying, I'm not getting married because it's not an equal relationship legally in marriage. And then at age 66, you did get married. And, of course, marriage has been on the minds of the lesbian and gay community for many years, and most particularly this last year. So I want you to talk about what marriage means to you, why you finally did it, and how it felt, why you resisted it for so long, and how you think all this plays out with same-sex marriage.
Well, I didn't do it for when I was supposed to do it, and waited until I was 66 because the laws were so unequal. I mean, if you got married, you lost all of your civil rights.
As a woman in a male-female relationship.
Right. You lost your ability to start a business, to get a loan, to have your own legal residence, to have your own name. Now, it isn't that I was so smart that I knew that, at 19 or 20. I just knew I didn't want to get married, But thanks to the women's movement, I began to realize how terribly unequal this was. But by the time I was 66, the laws were equal except for the big except, which is the two women and two men can't marry. David and I got married on a kind of impulse, you know. It wasn't as if we thought about it carefully. He had visa problems. My friend Wilma Mankiller, the chief of the Cherokee Nation, offered us a Cherokee ceremony. And we just did it, you know. And he said, oh, nobody ever needs to know. And I said, well, I think people probably will find out in a month or so. And then the very next day, you know, everybody was reporting all of this.
Well, but it's interesting because, in fact, same-sex couples want to get married to obtain rights, legal protections, and that sounds sort of ironic contrasted with your reason for not getting married.
Well, but it's not ironic because now the marriage laws are equal. I mean, the 30 years of hard work changed the marriage laws. And actually, you know, while I thought I was out there marching and doing whatever for gay marriage beforehand, I certainly am much more convinced now of how important it is because David was in the hospital for almost a year. And without the ability to make medical decisions and to have him on my insurance and, you know, all the different things that happen, it would have been far, far more difficult. So it kind of radicalized me all over again and made me understand how crucial it is. So we tried to refer to ourselves as partners and say, you know, try to always make the point of how uninclusive marriage was at the moment. Now, I know there are people who still feel it's a middle-class institution and not, but fine. But I just think that it has to be the decision of every couple, you know, and we have to make it possible for them to have the power to make that decision.
Available, if not mandatory.
Right.
She looked pretty good for 70.
Very good.
And you look pretty good for,
Yes. But she was very thoughtful about all these things. And she was a Gay USA viewer, by the way, occasionally at least. But she wasn't, you know, there are people who think she wasn't radical enough. That she wasn't progressive enough. I've read stuff like that, and over the years there have been questions. To me, she was extremely radical, but her affect was so even tempered, and she would say things that you would think later, wait a minute, that was very radical. So she was also a product of her time in some ways.
Sure. I mean, you know, some people have said, oh, early on, she didn't support transgender. It's interesting because it was over the Renee Richards case. Now Renee Richards comes out with a book and says, I shouldn't have been allowed to play. But Gloria Steinem made tremendous progress on this. And by 2013, she's writing op-eds, you know, for transgender rights.
Absolutely evolved. I'm also struck by a little parallel that she and Dolly Parton both came from nothing.
Yes.
From extremely impoverished childhoods. And Gloria talked a lot about that. And there's something about that perspective, that starting from the bottom economically, that gives you a view of the world, I think, that is a lot more compassionate and realistic than the people who start higher economically.
And she spent a good deal of time in her youth taking care of her mother.
Yes.
Who was in bad shape.
Yes.
I never had the pleasure of meeting her, unfortunately, but what did she do that marked her as a strong gay ally?
She just was very insightful, and she wasn't caught up in you know, conventional thinking.
Actually, we're going to get to that in the next clip, right?
Yes, we are. Well, okay, let's look at that.
Okay.
In 1970, if I may throw us backward a little, you were part of a press conference that was supporting gay rights. How'd you get so smart on gay stuff?
I don't think I was so smart, actually. It just
no?
I don't know. Well, it just never made sense to me that sex was all about reproduction. It wasn't that way for me, so why would it be that way for anybody else, you know? Right? It just, you know, unless somebody tells you otherwise, maybe I just benefited from not being brainwashed the other way.
Well, the whole culture, you know, was pretty brainwashing.
I don't know. It just made no sense. And well, I'm sure that I owe a lot to just that we knew each other. You know, in the women's movement, we knew each other. And I saw what Kate Millett, for instance, went through when she was first elevated by Time magazine and then, you know, condemned for being bisexual, I think. Wasn't that
yes,
the
so, yeah, I think so.
Right. So we had a press conference, and Kate and I held hands. You know, I thought maybe somebody would be confused.
Yeah.
part of the reason I wanted to write this column about gay marriage is trying to explain, you know, that the larger coalition, the larger reasons we all have been lied to about sexuality. We all have been told that it's only moral and okay if it's about reproduction. And we happen to be the only animals, although I always feel maybe I'm maligning other animals when I say that, who can experience the same sexual pleasure whether we can conceive or not.
Well, you are, because there, you know, homosexuality has now been observed in scores of animal species.
Well, in animal species, but also they tend to have periods of heat or estrus, which yes. human beings don't have, you know, in which they're more likely to conceive. So they may be doing something else over there, but they're also, right? But human beings, it's a mark of our humanity, like our cerebral cortex or our ability to reason or remember that sexuality is a way we communicate with each other and express love and closeness, not just a way we reproduce. And old people will always be ridiculed for being sexual and until we understand that.
Mm-hmm.
All women have to separate sexuality and reproduction, otherwise our health is at risk. And our lives are at risk. So we all have common cause in this. You know, it doesn't. It's just much bigger. You know, it seems to me to make clear that sexuality is a way of communicating.
So smart about everything. I mean, this was right after George W. Bush was reelected, and we weren't feeling so great. But she was still hopeful. In fact, during that interview, she said, 80% of the people who voted for Bush thought they were for the good things that the Democrats were for. I mean,
well, to go back to my analogy with Dolly Parton, she was not invested in the hierarchy. When you and I were going out to schools to speak to kids about homosexuality and HIV and AIDS, the easiest kids to talk to were the kids in the poorest neighborhoods, in the South Bronx, in drug programs on Staten Island, all of those kinds of...
Much tougher at the Dalton School, the
exactly,
big prep school.
Exactly. Because they, the prep school kids, of which I was one, were invested in being part of the hierarchy.
Well, there's money involved.
Exactly.
There's a lot of money involved.
She was not... in that, and
right.
she had a much more open mind and an open view of the world. So she was not invested in those kinds of divisions. So issues like this were very easy for her, and I appreciated that.
Very, you know, obviously committed to women's workplace issues. I mean, Jane Fonda and Robin Morgan, who we'll talk about later, they founded the Women's Media Center. They had to do that in 2003 to support women working in the media.
Well, she was involved in a million different issues around all of this, and she never stopped. She traveled the entire world endlessly, and I think some of that comes from an itinerant childhood, traveling around in a trailer with her father, an antique dealer. But she just was always on the road, always saying yes to people once I got her to start speaking.
Yes.
But she really was available to go everywhere and see everyone. Her 2 years in India after college were so formative for her, and she just was always curious and always open-minded.
Did you attend these open houses she had at her
No.
East
I was certainly at her house a number of times, and I slept in that loft bed there the night before the Women's Equality March in 1970. But no, the talking circles were sort of after my time of hanging out.
Because the woman that, you know, I watched, I think you would probably agree with me, was not a very strident person.
Never.
I mean, this was an eloquent, rather self-effacing type of individual.
Extremely self-effacing.
She wouldn't take the bait if you tried to bait her on these things.
And she never liked being called a leader.
Right.
She rejected all those kinds of hierarchies. She said, no, no, it's all of us, and it must be all of us, and it must come from the grassroots. And so the people who didn't like her and who thought she wasn't radical enough or whatever were angry at her for being picked out by the media as a leader, but in fact that was not her at all. That was not what she was
looking
for.
She was constantly asked, especially later in life, which when we interviewed her was later in life, who are you going to pass the torch to? And she would say, I have a torch. I'm not giving up my torch, but I'll touch everybody's torch. Everybody right. needs one.
Well, it was a very great privilege to know her. I miss her, and, I would have liked her to just be here forever.
You have your own torch, Anne.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I have my memories of knowing her, which I treasure, and really, she was a great role model for me in her niceness and her intelligence and her curiosity.
And we are going to link to that whole half-hour interview that we did in our emails. So go to gayusatv.org and sign up for that. And there'll also be some articles about Gloria in that email.
A couple of things. I watched something on HBO last night called Gloria in Her Own Words that was pretty insightful. And there's an article by Leslie Bennett from Vanity Fair, who specializes in doing very sharp, heroic profiles. And you get a lot of information in that, so you can look up those, too. Great to see you guys.
Nice to see you as well, Anne. We're sorry to see you go again.
You're welcome to stay.
That's okay. It's all yours. But who knows what will happen and when I might be back. But hi, everybody.
Thank you for being with us, Anne.
Thank you.
And thank you,
Good
Gloria,
to see you,
Anne. For what you gave us all.
Exactly.
All right. Should we swing around here?
Yeah, we're going to have to rearrange the deck chairs.
Is that all right, Rich? Are we okay? Can you follow us? Okay.
Good. Go right ahead.
We're good. So, on with the news. Well, we also lost Robin Morgan this week, a close associate of Gloria Steinem. She was 85. She worked as editor of Ms. Magazine. She was a feminist poet, writer, 20 books, radical activist, anti-war movement. She edited the book Sisterhood is Powerful in 1970, and she followed that theme throughout her life. She was radical. She co-founded the Women's International Terrorist Conspiracy from Hell, which...
Yeah, now these women faced, at times, violent backlashes from segments of society which had absolutely no intention of even opening their ears to anything they had to say.
When Gloria started Ms. Magazine, right? Harry Reasoner on the CBS or ABC, wherever the hell he was, news, a big anchor on the news, he goes, Ms. Magazine, women's liberation, they're going to run out of things to say in 6 months.
Right.
Which, of course, it still exists, and it's still going strong. Robin coined the term herstory instead of just saying history, herstory. And she came up with the slogan, the personal is political. Now, she spoke at a lesbian conference. She never identified as lesbian, but I think acknowledged that she had women lovers.
Yeah.
She was married to a man. She was married to a man who ended up being part of the Gay Liberation Front.
Right.
And they had a son. Kevin Pitchford. But let me finish this. She speaks at this lesbian conference in 73, and she objected to the presence of a transgender singer. But by the end of her life, she was saying, that trans rights are human rights, and we have to protect them. So another great loss. We will link to stories about her. She was diagnosed with Parkinson's 17 years ago, but she kept working.
The work of a lot of these feminists had really seeped into the vernacular by the time I was in college.
Yeah.
You know, English.
When was that?
1980s, English major, Brown University.
Yeah.
And Herstory was tossed around as a, possible alternative. The term phallocentric was introduced, meaning the way sentences are constructed, the way language is used can be considered to be overly oppressive towards women.
Sure.
Things of that sort. So by the 80s, I don't know what things are like today on campus, but by the 80s when I was an undergrad, it had definitely seeped into the the everyday coinage.
So we will link to more stories about Robin Morgan in our email. And I also want to note that we lost a friend of mine, but a great poet, Edward Field, who has died at the age of 102. And I'm going to, because we have to get to the news, I want to talk about Edward next week when Eric Botcher is going to co-host the show with me. So let's get to some more news. In New Hampshire, they had the primary yesterday.
Right. And Chris Pappas, out, a gay Democrat.
Already the Congress member.
New Hampshire native, Harvard guy. He's been in New Hampshire.
So he's got the Democratic nomination for U.S. Senate.
Well,
and he would be the first out male gay senator
in the U.S. Senate in the history of the country. And
Tammy Baldwin's still there.
And he's going to be going up against former Senator Republican Chris Sununu. The Times had a very good article today about the fractured state of New Hampshire politics. And
like everywhere.
Yeah, how things can somewhat be on the knife's edge.
Right. All right. One of the big stories of the week is how Mount Sinai Hospital here in the city of New York has ended pediatric gender-affirming care in agreement with the Trump Department of Justice. This is an outrage, but as we talked about with Ann, they're threatened with losing their funding, any kind of Medicaid funding. This is what the department is doing. So there was that big demonstration that we showed you the picture of last night, over 100 people. Now, there's been, a lot of pushback. Oh, I just want to quote something from the Trump administration. They call this protecting children from chemical and surgical mutilation.
Yeah.
Mount Sinai has also had to pledge $2 million for, detransition, if that's what people want, if that's what trans people want to do.
Okay, where's the money coming from?
Where's the money for the arch coming? Where's the money for everything? For the war?
The
money? We're $4 trillion in debt. You're asking where the money
from? I'm just asking some basic journalistic questions. Why $2 million? Where does the money come from? Is this a legal settlement or can this be challenged in court?
Well, we will see. But we're going to talk a little
bit. Where's the exposure on this deal?
We're going to talk a little bit about that. There has been pushback to what, obviously, in addition to the demonstration, Alejandro Caraballo, who's a Harvard Law clinical instructor, said, this agreement is a blatant violation of New York law. But because the New York Attorney General, Tish James, an ally of the community, has been spineless, holding the clinics to account. In the beginning of all this pullback, Tish James said, you can't do this, and I'm not going to let you do this. And now everybody's rolling over. Now, again, as Ann said,
she's rolled over quite a bit on some major topic legal affairs.
Look, Democratic administrations used to do this, too. If you don't do this, we're taking away your Medicaid and Medicare funding. And
right.
They would do it. So now you've got monsters in power, and this is what they're doing.
Right.
It's awful. All right. Let's go to Tucson, where we've told you about the murders of two gay men outside a gay bar, and the perpetrator in that case was also shot dead, although it's unclear.
In Tucson?
In Tucson.
Yeah, he blew his brains out. He killed himself.
He did.
Unfortunately.
After killing these two gay men. So
right.
In Tucson, more than 1,000 people came to a candlelight vigil last Wednesday, and, you know, the mayor spoke, hate crimes never happen in a vacuum, anti-LGBTQ violence is cultivated by anti-LGBTQ rhetoric. I'm looking at you, Donald Trump, and all the Republicans. Well, and there's been some justice in, how do we say this, Canandaigua, New York, which is
Ontario County.
Ontario County is easier to say. We've told you about the murder of in 2025
Sam
of Sam Nordquist, a trans man who was lured by this woman, Precious Arzuaga, and her friends. Oh, I love you, come here. Comes there, they imprison him and torture him to death. They involve children as young as 9 and 12
in
the torture.
Kids. Her two kids.
In the torture. So the news is that they have sentenced Precious Arzuaga to life in prison. They pleaded guilty. And another one, a guy named Cuijano, or is it a woman? Jennifer Cuijano. Also pleaded guilty, also sentenced to life without parole, and there are other defendants. There were three other defendants who have yet to be sentenced.
They're up to like five perps here.
Yeah.
The main two female perps have been involved in an on-again, off-again relationship over the years of some time. So it appears that there was a love triangle gone wrong, but let's just state for the record that 24-year-old Sam Nordquist died a torturous and tragic death. And how many of these stories over the years have the both of us covered? Unfortunately, there have been too many. And so I almost at times am challenged as to what I could possibly say to give merit to the victim's life or consolation to their family. But
and their families were there in court.
That's right.
Talking about what you have robbed us of.
In this case, this man was tortured, a term used in court by the prosecutors, over the course of many weeks, which marks this as being what the Ontario County District Attorney said, the worst crime he's ever prosecuted.
Right. Absolutely. So, and again, where do they get the idea that it's okay to dispose of trans lives? I mean, you hear it every day on Fox News, basically, and from the President of the United States.
You're getting
and
it from the
Elon
Oval
Musk is now going to spend $100 million or $200 million on races, and he is determined to make anti-trans against the Democrats the biggest issue. Now, this is an issue that is, and of course, he has this trans daughter who is estranged from him.
Right.
You know, so I think that's where that comes from with him. But I think, and of course, Trump is totally up on, we're going to end
right.
trans. Well, I think the issue is fading. When people can't afford to buy dinner, you know, or gas, they're going to be less concerned with your nonsense about trans people.
Well, I hope that it doesn't
have hateful nonsense.
I hope it doesn't have the impact it had in the 2024 race, where it took Kamala Harris campaign. It really threw that campaign off the tracks.
We can certainly argue about what would have happened anyway in that election.
But
in the next year, in New Jersey, in the gubernatorial race, and in the Virginia gubernatorial race, half the money was spent on anti-trans ads, and the Democrats won by 10 points each.
Right, and they're targeting people in the military.
So I'm just saying, it's not working anymore in this atmosphere.
Andy, I agree with you. However, if a race is a very, very close toss-up, you know, it could make the difference.
We'll see, but it can also cut the other way when you keep throwing this stuff at us, and you're not talking about our needs.
Well, people are being killed in the interim.
The only people who really, also when they poll and they ask, do you care about this? People say no.
No, they don't. And at some point, this has to be completely taken out of the political arena and put into the medical arena ethical arena where it belongs.
If only, because now we have the case in Madison, Wisconsin.
Right.
Two men are in custody. They picked up these two guys, Yofred Gutierrez and Arturo Albujas.
Right.
They're 31 and 27. They picked up this woman, trans woman, whose name is being withheld, and, you know, lured her away in the middle of the night. You know, I think they were like, you know, come with us, we'll have some fun. And then they started beating up and trying to rape her. Well, they face 20 years in prison for what they did. And one of them said to the cops, I am not gay. For you to be involving me with this weird stuff, I have a wife and kids.
Right.
So what's that
Buddy,
about?
At one point that might have worked, but that doesn't work anymore. Nobody buys that.
Well, I mean, they brutalized her. They could have killed her. But their bonds are set at $75,000 and $100,000.
Right. Well, what's going to happen is that one of them might snitch on the other.
Whatever. They are in custody. Better news in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
A cathedral has welcomed the Episcopal Church's first transgender dean, the very Reverend Mike Cronin. He began as dean of All Saints Cathedral, an LGBTQ-affirming congregation. He said, he's 30, so he's also quite young for this, but he said, just by me existing as a trans person and as a priest, I get to have conversations with people that very few people get to have. I think we have a chance to preach the gospel in places it wouldn't otherwise be heard. Yeah. I mean, people have to get to know people.
Yeah, that's true. And if church can be the place where gay and lesbian people can facilitate that, or where they can get a degree of respect, that I'm all for it. But I no longer support the New Testament as a blueprint for a healthy, free gay life.
Of course not. In Idaho, a jury found that Reverend Sarah LaWall, a pastor with a transgender child, we have a picture of her, she was guilty of a misdemeanor for trespassing and refusing to leave the office of Governor Brad Little back on April 1st. She was one of nine protesters. They're protesting the anti-trans bathroom ban.
Right.
And she noted, she's not trans herself, it's her child, that the maximum sentence for her crime, 6 months, is less than the punishment for violating the bathroom ban, which is a sentence of going into a bathroom that, you know, you're trying to go aligning with your gender identity, a one-year sentence.
That's how you put a stop to this madness. It's with straight allies, allies from other parts of society who come together and just say, we've had enough of this nonsense.
Now, you ask if anybody's suing, right?
Yeah.
In the Kansas City School District the DOJ is suing them over their gender policy. Harmeet Dillon, she's at the DOJ's assistant AG for civil rights. She says, we will not tolerate school districts playing fast and loose with federal law in the service of radical gender ideology. So they're trying to stand up and stand by their trans students and everything, but they are being sued. Now, 21 state AGs, and that includes Tish James in New York.
Uh-huh.
They're suing in Massachusetts to block HHS's federal. They want to ban federal Medicaid and Medicare funds to any treatment
right.
for trans youth other than psychotherapy or something.
Right.
So they are fighting back, and a Colorado school district is fighting back. This is they're taking a chance. This is Jefferson County, Colorado. They're suing the Trump administration over its demands to change its trans-inclusive policies. And they are putting at risk $50 million in federal funds in this
right.
district. Because they say, look, Colorado law says we can't discriminate. And you're telling us we have to discriminate? So let's see how that gets resolved in court.
Well, they've got it Medicaid. They've got it SNAP. They're pretending that they're looking out for the youth of America, which they aren't. You know, whether the child is black, white, gay, straight, or whatever. And this is a whirlwind that we're going to reap in the next 10 years. There are kids today going without food, going without immunizations, who are going without basic medical checkups because of this White House.
And we're all.
But yet they are fixated.
Yes.
On the testosterone levels in the men and women in the U.S. military.
And we are all now vulnerable to the lack of safety in the food supply.
Correct.
And that includes all the imported beef and mystery meat that Trump is bringing in.
So all of this hooey about protecting the youth of America, protecting the miners of America, is not worth the wind with which it is spoken.
Absolutely. And what else? They also plan to cut funds for daycare.
Yes.
And what they want to pump the money into, this is a J.D. Vance proposal, is for pay the stay-at-home parent. If you have a stay-at-home parent in a marriage, and they can't exclude same-sex marriages for this, but if you have a stay-at-home parent, they're going to get funded in the home.
Right.
Now, it's not a complete terrible idea, but you're going to take the money away they're taking the money away from daycare.
Correct. So the Treasury Secretary's husband will be compensated for taking care of their kids.
Yes.
Basically, that's what they're saying. No, they can't go after the gay issue anymore because it's become too embedded into society.
Well, it's law.
It's become too embedded into society. And
well, they do. The Heritage Foundation, which made this proposal, they acknowledge that, but they're trying to overturn Obergefell and Windsor, the court decision.
Oh, they would love to, but I think that could very possibly now be the third rail in American politics. Used to be Social Security. Maybe now it's gay freedom and gay marriage.
Right. All right. And that's why we vote overwhelmingly Democratic. Trump, the racism is unbounded. Trump released new rules that could revoke the tax-exempt status for any school offering targeted support to black or other minority students. The racism of this, the only people they want to help is white students, sometimes Asian students, they say, basically. They act like they're the oppressed groups here.
Right. But yet they would like Confederate monuments to stand all across the land.
Absolutely.
You know, he restored the monument in Lafayette Park of the of that Confederate general named General Pike, whatever his first name is. And you know, this was a big deal to make sure that Pike was re-erected.
The Confederacy has taken hold, has won in Washington, and or at least in the White House.
Yes.
And the great black Smithsonian secretary, I mean, he's the head of it, Lonnie Bunch, is stepping down at the age of 73. He's tried to put up the good fight against all the ridiculous things coming down from the Trump administration, but he's packing it in. He says, I am a fighter, and I hope, Lonnie, when you leave, you will be freer to speak about all the things. Lonnie Bunch is the guy, before he headed the Smithsonian, he oversaw the creation of the National Museum of African American History and Culture.
Which is one of the reasons why Trump is tormenting this person.
Right. Trump took a tour of that. It was so uncomfortable in his first term.
Yeah.
Arthur Leonard, a law professor, notes about the American Bar Association is making a retreat on DEI. They used to have a rule which said law schools, they voted to kill a DEI rule for law schools in a bid to protect its own accreditation powers. I mean, just awful. Retreat, the ABA. They're worried about, what Trump's going to do to them. Where are we going with this here? What's next? All right, that's a little complicated. We told you about how the U.S. ambassador to the Dominican Republic got rid of this painting out of the embassy, right? This is a painting by Kehinde Wiley, who did Obama's official portrait, right?
Right.
And originally they said, this is a terrifying painting. We're getting rid of it. But they found an old interview with Ambassador Leah Campos, and she said, it's a huge painting of a picnic in a park with flowers and some lesbians. It was total evidence of the indoctrination of the Biden administration wanted to do by bringing that ideology here to the Dominican people. By the way, Biden didn't bring it in. This was brought in during the Obama administration. And it's by a black artist, so the racism thing is in full display.
It's because he did Obama's official portrait. That's the reason why they're targeting the artwork. I mean, quite frankly, Andy, you and I traded the image yesterday before the show. I didn't even know what that image was showing, other than it was a very floral type of imagery with a diversity of racial figures in it.
We don't like diversity here in Washington.
Well, you better get used to it, because that's life.
I should say about the Dominican Republic, they decriminalized same-sex relationships in 1822.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
That's very early.
They don't have same-sex marriage. Well, of course, they don't have same-sex marriage, but they decriminalized gay sex 180 years before we did.
Right. Which goes to show you, it only goes to show you that gay sex has been happening for a long time.
Forever.
Very long.
What do you think of these? Trump's design for the uniforms for his space force.
Yeah, I think
put them up on the screen. What do you think of this?
A reimagining of the Wehrmacht for today's U.S. service members. If this does not evoke Nazi militarism, nothing does.
Well, Mussolini's black shirts.
No.
The brown shirts are the...
The brown shirts are the
ICE.
Well, but then the brown shirts became the SS.
Okay.
But
who wore black.
Right. But you realize the brown shirts were led by a gay man, Ernst Röhm, who Hitler assassinated on the night of the Long Knives.
Yes.
When Ernst was in bed with another guy.
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, the connections are many. Again, why are we wasting taxpayers' money on this nonsense?
To distract people from everything that's gone wrong with the country and the world under Trump, especially the Iran war and everything else. By the way, I have a correction. Last week's show, I said that there were more Republican votes in Congress for the Civil Rights Act in 1964 than Democratic ones. And a viewer corrected me. Thank you. There were a higher percentage of Republicans voting for the bill, but they were in the minority.
Yeah, they definitely were in those days.
So, there were more Democratic votes overall than Republican votes for it.
Yeah, was the day of the supermajority.
By the way, Barry Weiss, the horrible lesbian who runs CBS News now, she's looking to hire the far right Maria Bartiromo for 60 Minutes.
Right, she's scooping up any type of far-right mouthpiece that she can find to join her team.
We're going to link to a video from sex worker Taylor Snyder, trans girl outs Senator Lindsey Graham. It's like a half-hour testimony to her relationship with Lindsey Graham, the closeted senator from South Carolina who's been replaced by his numbskull sister.
If there was a way for us to link to it, I really would love for us to be able to do that. But no. Steve Schmidt of the Lincoln Project is also using the words of this trans woman to just again underline the utter hypocrisy in today's GOP.
Well, South Carolina still has statues up to Strom Thurmond, who raped his underage maid when he was a young man and had a child by her.
Right.
But that doesn't seem to disqualify him from honor.
The GOP representation in Congress is chock full of gay closet cases.
Yeah.
Chock full.
Yep. All right, let's go international. We've got about 4 minutes left. Alarming to see Germany's far-right neo-Nazi party, the Alternative for Germany, winning 44% of the vote in the elections in Saxony, a state in the former East Germany, and they could be on the verge of governing there. The other parties are going to try to keep them out. But this party, who was nationally headed by a lesbian who has kids and a wife, is against gay rights, is against adoption by gay people, wants to ban pride flags, etc. This is
Andy, this has historically been a very, very conservative part of Germany. You know, even going back to Weimar Germany and before. So very Catholic, very conservative.
But these parties are on the rise all across Europe.
Right. And until mainstream left and left of center parties come up with a way to enable young people to get jobs, to be able to afford a place to live, to be able to afford their future,
and that
we're going
to
have these right-wing alternatives.
And that goes for the Democratic Party in America. Of course, their big issue is immigration,
right?
You know, stopping immigration.
I mean, how did Hitler come to power? The country was mired in, you know, triple-digit inflation, and the youth felt completely hopeless in terms of having a viable future.
So let's give them hope. And I'm looking at you, Hakeem Jeffries. You used to be for Medicare for All. You better get behind it again.
When did he stop?
He was on the news. He was being interviewed about that. You used to support this. Why don't you support it now? Oh, I'm for improving, and we have a plan. No. Anyway. All right. Some entertainment notes. The movie Barbara Forever, the documentary about pioneering lesbian experimental filmmaker Barbara Hammer, is now in theaters, including the Film Forum in New York. We told you how in 2023 the singer and rapper Lizzo was sued by a former wardrobe designer for sexual and racial harassment and disability discrimination. Well, a judge just dismissed that suit,
yep.
So that's not going forward. Lizzo also has a children's book that just came out.
Okay.
And the hit... the Pet Shop Boys, the famous group.
One of my favorite bands.
Have announced A Man from the Future, a full-length musical piece about the life of Alan Turing, from 2014, will be finally released worldwide in an updated version on October 9th, and we will link. There'll be a listening party the day before in Manchester, England, and we're going to link to that in our email. And lastly, the hit musical Pride, which I love so much in London, has gotten a transfer to a large theater, the Bridge Theater in London. It's going to run from November through May. It's terrific. It's a musical about gay activists in 1984 supporting striking minors. That's when we all were locking arms and sticking together, and we have to do more of that in our society. We're down to our last minute. Any other thoughts, Mick Meenan?
I am looking forward to that Pet Shop Boys piece of work. They are one of my favorite groups. I saw them at the Barclay Center in 2023 with New Order. It was a double billing.
Also quite beloved by our associate producer, Bill Ballman.
Yes. I mean, they're a legendary pop band, if you will. I mean, they kind of gave me the language of gayness before I even was quite able to articulate it myself.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, and this is going back now to the 80s.
Wow.
Yeah, I remember listening to the music and thinking, there's something going on here.
Something has been going on here. We're out of time. Thank you for being with us. I'll be back with Eric Botcher next week.
Pleasure to see you. Have a great week.